Warning, A Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
One faction of one party in one House of Congress, in one branch of government, doesn't get to shut down the entire government just to refight the results of an election. Keeping the people's government open is not a concession to me. Keeping vital services running and hundreds of thousands of Americans on the job is not something you give to the other side. It's our basic responsibility.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Fake of Pinocchio Obama. Pinocchio Obama, the biggest fraud in the history of the presidency. Listen to me. Did you hear what he just said? You're listening to the Savage Nation. You've heard about Obamacare day in and day out, which is good. You know it's a fraud, what he's saying. You know there are over 1,000 exemptions of companies and unions with Obamacare exemptions. Do you know that? Don't you understand that I explained to you that if you give an exemption to one person or one entity, that means anyone can apply for an exemption, which means that any class action lawyer can sign up a class of 10 million people and sue the government for discrimination, for not permitting them to opt out of this Castro-like healthcare system. I'm going to read to you a list of 729 companies and unions with exemptions from Obama's socialized medicine. I may do it in the form of a filibuster, as though I am a minister without portfolio on the floor of the House without any power whatsoever, but with a large following. And when I get through reading to you the list of the 729 unions and companies with Obamacare exemptions, you will be shocked and you will ask yourself, how is that possible? How is it possible that a hypocrite like Obama, who I call Obama's drama, which I call Obama's drama, this is now Obama's drama, steal it and run with it, steal this idea. Obama's drama is Obamacare. When I heard him say one faction of one party in one House of Congress in one branch of government doesn't get to shut down the entire government just to refight the results of an election, a bulb went off in my head. And I thought, wait a minute, so a minority president doesn't respect the minority opinion? That's the mark of a dictatorship. That's the mark of an authoritarian ruining and running a government by himself. Listen to what I'm saying to you. Here is a minority president who doesn't respect the minority opinion and won't negotiate with the minority. He tells the minority they don't count. He tells the minority in the one party, in one house, in one branch of government, they don't exist. He tells the minority of one party, in one house of Congress, in one branch of government, that they have no opinion that matters in this country. So here we have a draconian minority president who doesn't respect minority opinion. Moreover, he lied. Because they're not shutting down the entire government. That's a big lie. That's the first big lie of Obama the drama. 800,000 federal workers are not being furloughed. 800,000 are not being furloughed. And I will read to you the names of the groups and the organizations that are being furloughed. And you'll ask yourself, wait a minute. If they're non-essential services and workers, which of them need to be permanently cut and why? Why do you think there is a crisis with regard to this discussion? Why do you think there's a crisis inside this Obamacare story? Because the government is bankrupt. Because Obama's a maniac like King Ludwig II, who was simply printing money. He has bankrupted the Treasury. He inherited $1 trillion debt and turned it into a $4 trillion debt. He is a man out of control. He's printing money. It's like the Weimar Republic. The working people know this. So he lies. He's lied to get where he is, and he keeps lying to stay where he is. And so when he says one faction of one party in one House of Congress in one branch of government doesn't get to shut down the entire government, everything he just said is a lie. First of all, he should respect one party, one faction of one party in one House of Congress in one branch of government, because they do represent a certain large number of the American people. Number one. Number two, he says they don't get to shut down the entire government. Well, Mr. Obama, you're a liar, because it is not shutting down the entire government. Somehow your Air Force One is being fueled and getting ready to go off to Asia on another one of your junkets. Then your third lie in that one paragraph is when you say, just to refight the results of an election. No one's refighting the results of an election. What you did was you changed Obamacare in so many different ways that it's not even a legal document. The Obamacare bill that was passed has no resemblance to what you made of it with your exemptions, your loopholes, and your favoritism. So they're not refighting the results of an election. They're challenging you on all of your machinations. And so again, ladies and gentlemen, this is an alarming time in American history. Would you like to hear the names of the federal workers who are furloughed? And then I'm going to ask you which of them need to be permanently cut and why. About 800,000 federal employees are not being furloughed and will not be paid. So who are they? Well, here are some of them. National parks. Commercial access will be permitted. It will be business as usual for oil, gas, and mining operations in national parks. Recreational visitors to our 84 million plus acres of public land, camping, blah, 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 National Zoo, Smithsonian, National Oceanic, blah, 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 are also closed to visitors. Okay, that costs a lot of money. Maybe there could be some belt tightening. Number two, Superfund cleanup. What a slush fund that is. What a slush fund that is. Tony Soprano is a piker compared to those in the Superfund cleanup business. If only Tony Soprano could have gotten his mitts into the Superfund cleanup, my God, just think he could have moved out of New Jersey. He could be living in Washington. He could be a senator today. Second only to NASA in the proportion of its employees staying home today, the EPA is down 94% of its staff of 16,204 bureaucrats. 16,204 bureaucrats. Did you hear this? Number three, flu vaccines. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a seasonal influenza program, which works to monitor and control the flu spread. Well, I believe that, I'll tell you right now, I have never taken a flu shot and never will. Never. I don't recommend it. I think they're the most dangerous, one of the most dangerous medical applications ever devised is a flu vaccine. And I could spend an entire show on why you should never take a flu shot, but I won't do it. So I'm glad that the flu vaccine mafia is now out of business for a while. Number four, food inspectors. Do you actually think they inspect your food? The FDA is now unable to support the majority of its food safety, nutrition, and cosmetics activities. Do you think they actually do anything of value? You don't think that people pay off these inspectors or pay off their bosses to get away with polluting America with contaminated food products? I do. So we have the FDA is unable to support the majority of its food safety, nutrition, and cosmetics activities, but the FDA isn't closed down. No, it's the inspectors that are closed down. Number five, water quality. The U.S. Geological Survey's water quality data will not be received, analyzed, or disseminated to the public. So what? Tell me what the water quality data does for you. Nobody knows. It's another slush fund filled with patronage positions of relatives of high-placed bureaucrats who can't get a job in the universities, who want a nice fat $175,000 a year plus a pension. Number six, here's the big one, climate research. Climate research, those who are paid, in other words, to prove the big lie of climate change are being laid off. What a shock that is. Renewable energy. Those in charge of monitoring nuclear reactors are still on the job. Interesting, they can segregate those jobs that are necessary, huh? But everyone at the Department of Energy currently working on cutting edge. The word cutting edge is so yesterday. Cutting edge research is staying home. We don't need cutting edge research. It's not cutting edge. It's grift. It's a bunch of grifters paying off your supporters and donors. Let them all stay home forever. Number eight, Panda Cam. National Zoo staff is still taking care of its pandas. Well, that's good. They can afford food for the pandas. But the zoo warned yesterday that we'll no longer be able to watch from home. Oh, my God. How much did that cost the U.S. government to run a panda cam? I wonder which one of these left-wing fanatics said shut off the panda cam to get all of the idiots at home who sit and watch a panda and have nothing else to do with their lives while they're waiting for the government cheese and the government handouts. They have nothing to do but watch a panda. That they're cutting off and I'm supposed to worry about a panda cam? Here's another one. Food programs. Oh, this is one I just right up my alley. The WIC program, which provides low-income pregnant women, new mothers and children up to the age of 5 with healthy food, is not funded as of Tuesday morning. Oh, well, that's a big one. What, as you well know, state-run funds will fill in the gap for these women. After all, they need the food. School lunches for low-income students are not affected. Food stamps are not affected. Did you hear this? Did you hear this? Food stamps are not affected. So that means all of the grifters in the food stamp racket will continue to be able to trade in food stamps, not for food, but for cash. Number 10, NASA. Number 11, courts. Number 12, veteran services. Number 13, health. Number 14, housing. Number 15, immigration. Number 16, financial regulators. Number 17, parts of Social Security. And I can go through this list for you, and I will ask you again, which of the organizations or departments that I just read need to be permanently cut and why? I've given you some samples of those that are unnecessary. I mean, the bureaucrats are not that stupid. If they know enough to keep school lunches for low-income students and to keep food stamps, then they must know exactly which workers and which departments are necessary and which are not. Wouldn't you say? Right? So what do we need all the rest of it for? In the renewable energy area, as you saw, those in charge of monitoring nuclear energy, nuclear reactors are still on the job. That's perfectly reasonable. But everyone at the Department of Energy working on grift in so-called solar and wind and this and that, they're staying home. That's because they're unnecessary employees. And so, therefore, we're not being hurt by any of this. It's all a lie. It's a lie from the beginning to the end. And I will ask you again, which services or departments that I just read or of those that you know need to be permanently cut from this bloated bureaucracy under Barack Obama, who is the single largest employer in the United States of America? When I come back, I will take your calls at 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282, and I will list for you the 729 companies and unions with Obamacare exemptions. But hold on now. It's very important you understand that when I wrote, and I'm telling you again, because my books are not so much a book as they are a reference for you. When I wrote my last big nonfiction book, Trickle-Down Tyranny, I spent an entire chapter on the Schechter brothers, three kosher butchers who sued Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Commerce Department because the Commerce Department under the last big socialist president, who was FDR, tried to impose regulations on kosher butchers, and the kosher butchers said they're not going to do it. It violates their religious practices. They were put in jail by Franklin Delano Roosevelt's minions. When they came out of prison, the Schechter brothers sued the federal government, and they won, and the Commerce Department was stopped in its tracks. We must sue Barack Obama's health care department. Every other department that is stepping on our rights must be sued, and here's where you vicious class action lawyers come in. I'm going to give you the juiciest idea you've had in years. Those of you looking for a new angle, I want you to put out an ad, a class of people who want to be exempted from Obamacare, who are not allowed to be exempted because they're not a member of one of the contributing unions or organizations such as 24-Hour Fitness, Allied Building Inspectors, IUOE, Alpha Omega Home Health, LLC, Anderson Corporation, Bowman's Sheet Metal Heating and Air Conditioning, because they're not a member of any of these groups or companies who paid off someone in the administration, in my estimation, to get an exemption. They're being discriminated against. And therefore, you have a major class action lawsuit against Sebelius and against the government itself. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We are talking about Obama's drama, which is obviously the socialized medicine called Obamacare, the Frankenstein that he created. His big lie today was saying that one faction of one party in one House of Congress and one branch of government has shut down the entire government just to refight the results of an election. He lied in every element of that sentence is a lie. That's number one. Number two, he shows that he himself is a minority president. Does not respect a minority opinion. What does that tell you about this man's character and his mental state? That's number one. And it also tells you that he's willing to lie at every stage. I mean, everyone will lie here and there as a politician. But this man is a naked liar about everything. It's unbelievable to me. 800,000 workers are not furloughed. That's number one. The government's not shut down. No one's trying to refight the results of an election. You changed the Obamacare law. It's not even a semblance of what was passed. It was modified 100 different ways by Pelosi, by Obama, by Reid, by the special interests that could reach even Republicans. Do you know there are multiple types of groups who are exempt? I'll read you the actual names in the next hour. But I'll give you a few. You're not going to believe what I'm telling you. You can be exempt if you are part of a federally recognized Indian tribe. Now search for some Indian blood. And then apply for tribal recognition. You can become exempt. People who can't afford coverage. That's interesting. So you're going to carry them on your back. People with household income so low they don't have to file a federal income tax return. Carry them on your back. People who are members of a religious sect that has objections to insurance, Social Security, and Medicare. Okay, you're all members of the Savage religion. We object to Medicare, Social Security taxes, and Obamacare. Join us. Let's create a religion. People who are in jail or prison are exempt. Can you believe the exemptions this man has permitted?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
KSFO. And there's a hotline where you can apply over the phone and get help with the application. Or just get questions that you have answered by real people in 150 different languages.
What?
Let me give you that number. The number is 1-800-311.
Did you hear what Obama the drama just said? They have translators in 150 languages to make certain that every illegal immigrant on the planet can sign up for this monstrosity called Obamacare. Now, who else is exempt from the Affordable Care Act, which is, you know, the Affordable Care Act unto itself is something that only Nancy Pelosi could come up with, because nobody can believe this is going to be affordable to anybody. Do you know who else is exempt? If you're a member of a federally recognized tribe, I told you. If you're a member of a religion that has an objection to this, you can opt out. Jail or prison, opt out. If you're not a U.S. citizen or a national, you can opt out. In other words, they don't have to pay. You get it? This is a twofer. In other words, if you're an illegal alien making $1 million a year, you don't have to sign up for Obamacare. Now, here it comes. People who experience a hardship will be exempted from the Affordable Care Act if they wish. What is a hardship? This was written in after the law was passed. Being homeless or recently homeless. Being evicted in the past 6 months. Or facing eviction or foreclosure. So all you need to do is get a lawyer to send a letter saying you're facing eviction or foreclosure, you're out of Obamacare. Who's going to check on it? One of the morons they're hiring? Being a victim of domestic violence, you're out of Obamacare. Having a close family member die recently, you're out of Obamacare. Did you hear what that is? Everyone has a family member who dies, so now you can opt out of Obamacare using that as a pretext. Filing for bankruptcy in the past 6 months, you're out of Obamacare. So who is left? I'll tell you who's left. The young people, the dummies. The young dummies who thought that Obama was young and cool and Romney was old and uncool. The young dummies who were snookered by Nancy Pelosi and the slickest advertising campaign in the history of mankind. the young dummies who voted for this cool guy, Obama, are going to support the entire system on their backs. Why? Well, because they're basically healthy and don't use doctors. But they're going to have to pay $150 to $300 a month each, is my guess, to support everybody else. And this is what I'm trying to tell you, is the young people don't even know what's coming. They don't even understand what they did to themselves. They were taken in by their own, should I say, belief system, their own biases. I want to go back to the Schechter brothers, the Schechter Brothers Poultry Company in New York, the four Jewish brothers who opened kosher poultry slaughterhouses. In Yiddish, their last name means ritual butcher. What does that mean? They butcher chickens to conform to Jewish dietary law. And in order to maintain a kosher operation, the Schechter brothers had to sort out or remove sickly or dangerously unhealthy chickens. Well, that flew in the face of the new regulations handed down by Obama's spiritual uncle FDR in his totalitarian mandate. In short, Obama's ancestor, FDR, and his government said customers had to buy either an entire coop of chickens or half a coop of chickens, but they were forbidden to pick out particular birds in the transaction. In other words, the new law forced the Schechter brothers to sell unhealthy chickens to people who didn't want to buy them. So that made no sense to a kosher business. So it violated their religious freedom. And they said they're not going to do it. So the government cracked down on them, and they went to jail. They ran afoul of the live poultry code of the NRA. They were arrested. Listen to this. Arrested by Obama's mentor, FDR, tried in court, and they went head-to-head with the government lawyers. These were uneducated men and had no legal training. They had a lawyer, but it was not a big-shot lawyer from a top firm. They hardly spoke any English. Their command of English was so broken, and their syntax was such today that you would associate it with a stand-up comedian from the Catskills. In the end, FDR, Obama's mentor, found them guilty as charged, fined them a year's wage, and then sent them to prison. But the story didn't end there, and I'm trying to read this to you for a reason. The Schechter brothers appealed their case, which ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court. And against all odds, in Schechter Poultry Corp. versus the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled in favor of the Schechter brothers. And wait till you hear what was written. The Supremes ruled that FDR's program was unconstitutional on several levels. Of primary concern was the way his NRA program sought to regulate interstate commerce. Constitutionally speaking, interstate law is governed by the states and not the feds. Now, furthermore, the Supreme Court said that FDR's regulations were an usurpation of congressional power. After the decision was handed down, Justice Louis Brandeis, for whom Brandeis University is named, he would roll over in his grave if he saw the type of insanity taught at Brandeis today. Justice Louis Brandeis told a lawyer representing FDR's New Deal the following. Listen to this one line. Listen to it. This is a lesson for Obama and his dictators. Here's what Brandeis said. He was a Supreme Court justice. He said, "This is the end of this business of centralization, and I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything. It's come to an end." That is Justice Louis Brandeis, who put an end to FDR's Stalinism. Because back then we had justices who could speak plain English and tell the plain truth. Imagine one of our Supreme Court justices today drawing a line in the sand against the president in such a direct manner. And this brings us back to how Obama's Frankenstein health care bill can be repealed. It's all in trickle up poverty from pages one, I think it's one, I have 30 pages on it. Chapter 5, the health scare fraud, what's really in the bill. I try to warn you, many of you bought the book, it was a bestseller. I think it's in paperback now. Stopping Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security, trickle up poverty. And the chapter on the health scare fraud is not to be missed. If you're a lawyer, you have to buy the book to read the Schechter brothers case. You have to read Justice Brandeis' statement when he said, "This is the end of this business of centralization. And I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything. It's come to an end." We're waiting for someone to sue Obama's regulatory department. We're waiting for somebody to sue Sebelius. We're waiting for it to get to the Supreme Court. where hopefully it will be overturned. It will take a while. Someone may have to go to jail in order to sue. But remember, you won't be alone and you will win. The fight is just beginning. I am the architect of the new America. I have written enough books for you to use trickle-up poverty and trickle-down tyranny alone as the architectural plan to save America, incidentally. It's that simple. I don't know what else to say to you. If you care to comment on any of the comments I've made or on Obama's comments, 855-407-282. Now, I would be remiss if I only focused on Obamacare today when Benjamin Netanyahu came to the United Nations and made an appeal that was very, very frighteningly frightening because he made a proclamation that he will not permit Iran to develop a nuclear weapon. He said if he has to go it alone, Israel will do it. And there's a reason for it because Iran has said they'll wipe Israel off the map. It's an existential problem the Israelis face. They're not going to let men, women, and children be annihilated by Iran's nuclear bomb. They don't care who argues what, why they argue it, how they argue it. And that is because Iran is a rogue nation. Iran is not a member of the family of man. In other words, you say, well, other nations have the nuclear weapon. Why shouldn't they? Logically, you're correct. But there's no other nation on earth that said, I'll use my nuclear weapon when I get it to wipe out a race because I am a racist psychotic who has twisted my religion into something it was never intended to be. And so Iran is a rogue nation run by a group of rogue elements. Israel has every right, as David did, to stand up to the Goliath. You may say, well, no, Israel's the Goliath. No, my friend, Israel's not the Goliath. Israel is the biblical David, and the hostile Islamic world is the Goliath. And I can guarantee you, when you listen to Netanyahu's statement on this, which I'll play in a moment, you will understand that he will strike Goliath in the eye and blind him forever if Goliath tries to step on him. Let's hear Netanyahu right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Israel will never acquiesce to nuclear arms in the hands of a rogue regime that repeatedly promises to wipe us off the map. Against such a threat, Israel will have no choice but to defend itself. I want there to be no confusion on this point. Israel will not allow Iran to get nuclear weapons. If Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone. Yet in standing alone, Israel will know that we will be defending many, many others.
Well, that's the Churchillian moment we've been waiting for. Netanyahu is the Churchill of our time. Obama is, at best, the Neville Chamberlain of our time. But I think Neville Chamberlain was a far, far better man than Obama could ever be. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation playing a song that I loved as a child, The Poor People of Paris by Les Baxter, circa 1956. Something about it I liked. It led me to believe poor people were happy and carefree. They wore dead man's pants. They carried around baguettes. They drank wine. They smoked cigarettes. They made love vociferously. They were happy, the poor people. Of course, that was a child's view of being poor, and I've spent the rest of my life trying not to be poor, and here I am with a president who wants to make certain that I become poor. Because you see, Obama is a lifetime Leninist, Marxist, socialist, however you want to put it. That is his... Everything the man says and does is an attack upon the bourgeoisie. I don't care whether he wears a red beret and marches with a Che Guevara poster. It doesn't matter. That's what he's doing. He's attacking the middle class. What do you think Obamacare is? Something that is going to help the middle class? No, it's going to hurt the middle class. That's what they want to do, these diehard leftists. Now, I would be. It's important for me to mention the following to you, okay? It's important for me to do the following. 855-400-7282. 855-407-282 is the phone number. The reason I'm playing the syncopated clock right now is because of the following. We're giving you a 90-day countdown. 90-day countdown. Set your clocks to when Savage goes day part. The big Savage day part begins on January 1st or 2nd. I move to the drive time slot that everyone in the History of Radio wants on the best stations in the country, on the best stations in the country, Cumulus. And I have to say this about my colleague, Sean Hannity. And that is this. He's actually a nice person. But the reason I was granted his slot on the best stations in the country is because he bored people to death by pushing his television show, amongst other, let us say, offenses. Day and night he used the radio show as a throwaway to push his TV show. He made a mistake, and it cost him this position, in my opinion. So I'm the heir apparent to Drive Time on the East Coast. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because there's a way we can all win here. Many of you like Sean. And he is sort of the guy next door. He is Joe Sixpack. And many Joe Sixpacks will continue to like him. But many Joe Sixpacks need a little bit more than Sean Hannity can offer. And so they like Savage. And they don't know what to do. And here's the answer. You listen to Savage on the radio, and you watch Hannity on television. It's that simple. Because if you watch Hannity, if you listen to Hannity on the radio, all you're doing is getting a preview of what he's going to do on television, and you're going to miss me. You won't hear what I've said, my insights, my humor, my complaints, my food, my this, whatever. It's my show, and it's a show that many of you have come to love. So as I say, it's the best of both worlds, Savage on the radio and Hannity on TV. It's a win-win for everybody. And then after he goes home from his radio show and has time to find out he still has a family and play with them, he'll come back nice and refreshed for his late television show. Nice and refreshed because he's looking forward to that late slot on TV, as he said, because he's discovered that he has a family, which is nice. That's good. And then, of course, you've got the Savage radio show at 12 o'clock on the East Coast to 3 and 3 to 6 on the West Coast. So let's see a syncopated clock. I'm going to repeat this on a regular basis for 90 straight days till I myself collapse from the repeat. But look, if I'm not for myself, who will be? If I am only for myself, who am I? I am Michael Savage. All right, they're going to think it's the end of the show. Now, I want to go back to Obamacare for a reason, because I want to tell you a story about me when I was 14 years old, because many of you love my stories. It's something others are trying to match, and it's unfortunately they can't do it. When I was 14, you see, I took a job in a local drugstore in Queens, New York. It had nothing in common with the big name brand drugstores found in just about every neighborhood these days. This was a simple mom and pop drugstore. And I'll never forget the first time I met Doc the pharmacist. Doc was an Italian immigrant from the old country who probably lived in a small apartment over the shop. He was a thick-set man with an oversized shoe on his right foot. The heel must have been 8 inches high to compensate for his short leg. Unlike the sterile-looking pharmacies today with their harsh overhead lighting designed to give you a migraine so you buy more aspirin, I don't think there was a fluorescent light bulb in that drugstore. Doc's store had wooden shelves sagging under the weight of tonics and lotions, I can remember it to this day, and glass display cases with rows of first aid supplies and sundries. It even smelled different. To this day, I still remember the distinctly pleasing aroma greeting me the moment I'd walked through the door of Doc's drugstore. I'll put it to you this way. It was as if the mahogany counters and floor had been scrubbed down with Old Spice and Lysol with a hint of leather. Whatever happened to that incredible smell? I should have bottled it. These days, drugstores smell like nothing, and nobody knows your name. With Doc, you felt like family. So let's set aside the fact that he was paying me 50 cents an hour below minimum wage to save a few bucks. I was happy. I had a paying job on the weekends, and after school, I worked 7 days a week. That's all I needed. I was glad for the work and looked forward to going there. At lunch, Doc's wife treated him like a king. She'd bring in a big tray with a top to keep the veal parmesan or other homemade feasts warm. He'd sit down at his desk for the better part of an hour, savoring every bite. Preferring to eat his meal in peace, he'd make me, the 14-year-old, the pharmacist. I mean, how hard was it to fill out the prescriptions? All I had to do was read penicillin 250 milligrams, find the right jar, and it said penicillin, and then count out a dozen pills. I didn't need medical training to count to 12. The only time things got a bit dicey was on the rare occasion when some doctor wanted a blend of drugs ground together. You know, he'd ask for 2 milligrams of sulfur powder, then 0.5 gram of phosphorus, plus other ingredients. They still did that, if you can believe it. These doc would compound himself. All I did was count pills, like today's college-educated pharmacists. Well, one afternoon, I'm doing my job, counting out pills, minding my own business, while Doc was wiping the sauce from the edges of his mouth. In walks a guy in a dark suit and a receding hairline. He looked a lot like Robert Duvall as Tom Hagen in The Godfather. I glanced up as he approached the counter. I never saw the man before and had no idea what he wanted. He studied me like a hawk, watching me filling out the prescriptions. And then with a fake smile, he said, hi, how are you, son? Fine, I said. Well, I didn't know at the time why he was scoping out the place. Something about him made me instinctively wary. Can I help you, mister? No, just looking, he said. He raised an eyebrow like an IRS agent who just found an unreported nickel during an audit. His eyes darting around the drugstore, zeroed in on Doc, sitting beside me, eating the last few bites of his veal parmesan. The next minute, he marches behind the counter to Doc, pulls out his ID and says, Doc, I've got real bad news for you. I later learned he was a city government inspector. That afternoon, Doc got hit with a fine and I lost my job. It was a watershed moment in my life. Looking back, there have been two life-changing outcomes from those experiences working in the pharmacy. I came away with a profound interest in medicine and years later went on to write several best-selling books on the topic, including Earth Medicine, Maximum Immunity, Healing Children Naturally, and Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. That's number one. Second, I grew to be leery of government intervention, particularly when a bureaucrat flashes a fake smile and pretends he or she is there for my benefit. Back then, I lost my job when the government stepped in. Today, I'm losing the best healthcare system in the world. You get it? That's the story.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
So we've been talking about how Obamacare can be overturned by those who either file a class action lawsuit or claim an exemption. I mean, there are so many organizations and groups who have exemptions that virtually anyone can qualify. People who experience a hardship can be exempted. That means being a victim of domestic violence, being evicted in the past 6 months, you're exempt. Having a close family member die, exempt. It's unbelievable what kind of loopholes were put in by Nancy Pelosi and her friends over the last several months. So when he says in his big lie in clip 12 that they're shutting down the entire government to refight the results of an election, it's a lie from top to bottom. Listen to clip 12 again on the Savage Nation.
One faction of one party in one House of Congress in one branch of government doesn't get to shut down the entire government just to refight the results of an election.
Stop right there. Every statement he made is a lie. First of all, one faction of one party in one House of Congress and one branch of government represents a minority opinion. And here we have a so-called minority president saying drop dead to a minority opinion. Write that down. You won't read that in the Wall Street Journal tomorrow, but you heard it on the Savage Nation. I find it grotesquely offensive that a minority president would spit in the eye of a minority faction in America who does not want to shut down the entire government. That's the second lie, because 800,000 government employees went to work today. The essential ones went to work. The non-essential ones stayed home. That's lie number two. Then he says they do it just to refight the results of an election. That's lie number three. Nobody's refighting the results of an election. What do you mean an election? What does the election have to do with it? When did we vote on Obamacare? We didn't vote on Obamacare, number one. Number two, you and your minions changed so many aspects of Obamacare since it was written that it doesn't even resemble the original bill. You modified the bill so many different ways that you changed it and it's not even a fact of law anymore. So everything he said is wrong and a lie. And so it has to be challenged. The Schechter brothers challenged president of the United States in the 40s, FDR, who was Obama's mentor in some ways, I suppose, That's what we read in the beginning. I pray it's only FDR and it's not somebody else. But FDR was challenged by the Schechter brothers, these immigrant Jewish butchers, and they went to jail because they believed so much in their religious beliefs. They came out of jail and they fought him and they won. And then Louis Brandeis, the great Louis Brandeis, who I suppose was a liberal, when the word liberal still meant liberal, not communist, after the decision was handed down, Louis Brandeis said that FDR's regulations were a usurpation of congressional power. And then liberal justice Louis Brandeis told a lawyer representing FDR's New Deal the following. He said, "This is the end of this business of centralization. And I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything. It's come to an end." That was then. That was a liberal justice, Louis Brandeis, in the Supreme Court. And that's what will happen in this country if somebody challenges Obama's, you know, CubaCare, if you want to call it that. Okay, and we're talking about the Savage Change. We're 90 days away from the big changeover to the most desired spot, time slot in talk radio on the best stations in the country. Stations I've clamored to be on from the day I began in radio, by the way. The greatest stations are owned by Cumulus. Make no mistake about it. There are good stations elsewhere, but the A stations are owned by Cumulus. It's the waterfront, it's the beachfront real estate of radio. And in the last phase of my radio career, I'm going to be on them. It's really that simple, and I deserve it. I've worked 20 years for it. And as I've said to you, it's almost fate that it wound up this way. And you can both have Savage and Hannity. You listen to Savage on the radio, where you get my news, views, and reviews. And then you listen to him on television, where you get his take on the world. Let's put it to you that way. All the guests that no one else can get, because nobody else wants them. I mean, how many times do you want Newt Gingrich on your show? That's a sales point. We get all the guests no one else gets. No one wants Newt Gingrich. I don't even think his mother would want him to visit if she was still alive. God bless her. How many times can you have Karl Rove on a show? You know, without playing the Horst Wessel song. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. You want Wayne LaPierre on your show again? How many times can you have Joe the Plumber on your show? So as I say, look, if you like that fare, you'll get it on television plenty, and you get to watch the lead-in, who's that pretty girl, whoever her name is, the nail file, whatever her name is, the nail file? Megan the nail file. Megan's Nail File show precedes them. So, no, you get both. It's the best of both worlds. Get Savage on the radio, and you get Hannity on TV late that night. Okay, let's take some calls. Paul on WABC, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr.
Paul. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. It's a real honor and pleasure to talk with you. I just wanted to say how I came across you. I was listening to talk radio for a long time. I had the wall banger on one day, and I just couldn't take it anymore. I started flipping through the dial, and I stumbled across. Yeah, I think it was in the 6 o'clock time slot. But anyway,
yeah,
it was
right.
Like a breath of fresh air. It was just, it was so fun to hear just somebody talking without an agenda. You know, you told things the way they are. You spoke your opinion. It was just, it was interesting.
All right, I appreciate it. Some have said I'm like the Yogi Berra of talk radio. I call him as I see him.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I could agree with that. But
I mean, how do you define me when I come down last week on elephant hunters like that pig who shot an elephant in the face in Africa, who's a big wig in the NRA, and I said, rip up your NRA card till they fire him. Now, how do you define me on that?
I ripped up my NRA card.
I would throw it in the, and I would burn my NRA card if I had one. I burnt my NRA card a long time ago when I found out who Wayne LaPierre really was. It's a business like every other. It's a business like every other. They're no different than the Republican Party, the NRA. And when I saw that pig shoot that elephant and drink champagne while the elephant lay dying and begging for her life and shoot it again and say it's no different than killing a fly, I said, this is why young people hate old white men with guns.
Right.
I just got angry because, well, whatever. You got the picture. NBC canceled the show, the hunting show. That's not good enough. I want to see 1 million members of the NRA burn their cards. Like the feminists burnt their brassieres. The NRA members should burn their cards in front of the NRA headquarters until they fire that guy for killing that elephant. Anyway, Paul, I hope you continue to listen when I move to drive time. It's that simple. 855-407-2822. Hey, what time is it already? 12 minutes after. I'm a little tired tonight. Something's wrong. I don't know what it is. It's October weather already. It's weird. It's like autumn. I need something to pick me up right now. Did you see the other stories in the media? You didn't hear this one. Obama has now purged two top Marine combat generals today. Now, remember what he's doing. Friday, he fired the second in command of our nuclear arsenal for trumped-up charges on gambling. That's how they kill people today. In the old days, they would just take them out and shoot them. Today, they make up a lie about a general or a leader in the military, and they throw them overboard that way. In other words, it's not the days of the dictators who just kill the generals they want out of the way like Stalin did. Here, they purge them in another way. So he fires the second in charge of our nuclear arsenal, for no reason so I can tell. And today, the top Marine on Monday threw two generals into retirement who are stern, hard, good Marine Corps combat veterans. General James Amos threw his men overboard. He did what he had to do to keep his own job, I'm sure. That's how it's done. And he fired Major General Charles M. Gurganis and Major General Greg A. Sturdivant, blaming them because the Taliban overran a British-run airfield in southwestern Afghanistan several years ago. They blamed the generals because the enemy was able to penetrate the perimeter. Have you ever heard of anything like this? Do you have any idea what Obama is doing to our military, the war he is conducting against anyone in the military who might stand up to his potential coup? Now, I know what I just said is a mouthful, and people are going to say I'm crazy. I am telling you I have studied history, and I start to put the pieces together. This man knows no boundary to his egotism, his narcissism, his power madness. There is no other explanation for the billion or so bullets that they stored when Janet Napolitano was in charge of DHS. Nobody knows where those hollow point bullets went. There's no other explanation for purging so many generals in so short a period of time other than there were a remnant of the hardcore in the military that might not roll over to a petty martinet in the White House who gives them orders that they may find to be unconstitutional. I am very concerned that there's something under the surface in the works. I don't even want to talk about it. I shouldn't have even mentioned it. And I will be back in a moment.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
So we have a real problem on our hands with the Castro care that is being put in place. With all the loopholes put in by Nancy Pelosi and her friends over the last few months that are coming out little by little, you can see the exemptions run into the 700s now. And virtually anyone who can get a lawyer or an inside track can be exempted. You can say that you have a close family member who died recently. How are they going to check on that? And you want to be exempted. You could be worth $100 million and you could be exempt. You can say that you're going to be evicted or you're going to be foreclosed. You can get a lawyer to write that letter or a real estate friend. You can get out of Obamacare. You can say you're a victim of domestic violence. How are they going to check on that? What does that mean? Your husband yelled at you? Okay, I'm exempt from Obamacare. Honey, come yell at me. We'll both be exempt. Or are you a member of a religious group that has religious objections to insurance, Social Security, and Medicare? That would be the Amish, right? So they're exempt. So create a religion. Are you a member of a federally recognized tribe? You're exempt. Become a member of a recognized tribe. You can find some people. Now, the Obama spy panel, it turns out, is loaded with insiders, critics charge. Big story, can't go into it. Remember all of the public backlash about Obama spying on everybody around the world? So the president lied, and he said he was going to create an independent group to review the vast surveillance programs which allow the collections of phone and email records. Well, he didn't do it. In fact, even left-wing groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation is screaming bloody murder. Why? Did you hear who we put on this review group? It's like a kangaroo court. The members of the review group who report directly to Obama to talk about who should be spied on are Richard Clark. You know who he is? Michael Morell, Obama's former deputy CIA director. Law professor Jeffrey Stone, who has raised money for Obama and spearheads a committee hoping to build Obama's library in Chicago. Wait, it gets even worse now. Law professor Cass Sunstein. You know who he is? Well, look into Cass Sunstein. Peter Swire, a former OMB privacy director for Bill Clinton. So Mark Jacox, a policy analyst for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, said, at the end of the day, a task force led by General Clapper full of insiders and not directed to look at the extensive abuse by the agency will never get at the bottom of the unconstitutional spying. So now combine the spying with the bullet grabbing, with the purging of the generals, with the other machinations of this administration, and you can get some sleepless nights out of this. You can get some real sleepless nights. Deidre on WABC, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
It's an honor to hear you speak, Mr. Michael Savage. And I'm truly an advocate for injustice. And, of course, I think of Hitler. And I think about the regimes and how that time and era where people were not aware until it happened.
Right. Well, the difference between Hitler and, let's say, the current tendency towards authoritarianism is quite dramatic. Hitler wrote a book called Mein Kampf where he outlined what he was going to do, and he did it. Obama never wrote a Mein Kampf, so we have no architectural plan of where he is going. All we know is that the man is a transformational president, but he's never defined what that transformation will consist of, Deidre. That is the worrisome thing, and as I pointed out in some of my writings, what do you mean transformational? Into what? What's your model? Is it Moscow of the 1950s? Is it Beijing of the 1990s? Is it Cambodia? What is your model? We don't know what his model is for transforming us. Is it as benign as Belgium? Or as benign as Paris? Is it benign as London? What is the model for his transformationalism? We don't know, Deidre. That's the worrisome part. And let me tell you something else. This is something you must never, ever forget. I know it's very late. I'm in the late slot right now. It's Siberia of radio. It's the Siberia of radio. But I've come to love it. It takes me all day. I have the last word in talk radio. I get some great sound. I can adjust to anything. I'm a very adaptable person. Being an immigrant son, I learned how to adapt to anything. I mean, within reason. So I adapted to the late show. So here I am, and many of you are tired and you're up late listening to me because you don't want to miss a thing. I get it. 90 days from now, you won't have to stay up this late. You may have to stay up this late if you want to watch Wallbanger on TV. Okay, yes. That's another story when he goes into the Siberia of Fox News. That's the equivalent of Elaine's restaurant in the back room where he's going. But so let's say you listen to this show in the daytime, and what you're going to get is some of the insights. But the thing is, look, it's a worrisome time with this guy. We don't know where this is going to end. What in the world does he mean by being a transformational president? He's purging the military of older guys who are hardened combat veterans. Why is he doing that? He's coming up with trumped-up charges. He surrounds himself with radical leftists like Cass Sunstein from day one. Cass Sunstein and his wife are hardcore left-wing fanatics who have been around Obama from day one. These are like university professors who have never changed one iota. They march in lockstep with Lenin. I don't care that they wear modern clothing and they drink cappuccinos.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Well, here's a terrible gun story. Cops shoot Texas homeowner dead after he kills intruder. A Texas homeowner was shot dead by police after he shot and killed a career criminal who broke into his home. The police idiots did not realize 57-year-old William Keith Hall was defending his home when they arrived, and so they killed him. That's all. It's that simple. Shall I read you the rest of the story? Read it for yourself. Guy breaks in. Hall kills him. Cops come, think that the homeowner is the criminal, and they kill him. Whoops, sorry. Whoops, sorry. Hall and the criminal died at the scene. Read the Dallas Morning News. Okay, that's that story. That's nice. Go defend yourself with a gun. You don't know which way to turn anymore. It's unbelievable to me, isn't it? It's crazy. What else is going on in the world? The Energy Department chief says the Solyndra loan program is terrific, is a terrific success. If you tell a big lie often enough, it will become the truth. Obviously, Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz, who dismissed the controversy surrounding the loan program that gave $500 million to a now bankrupt solar energy company, learned very well from Goebbels. He called the program a terrific success, despite the high-profile bankruptcies. This is what you get under Obama. You get Joseph Goebbels in a skirt. $500 million. Remember when the FBI invaded Solyndra when they went bankrupt and took their papers and I celebrated? I said, oh, great. Someone called the show and said, no, Michael, not great. The reason Obama threw the FBI in there was to make sure no one ever sees the records. Have you seen the records on the $500 million where it went? Has anyone gone to jail? There's your answer. So that's that story. Now, I want to break away from politics for a minute. We've been putting together the Savage Golden Oldies for you. I'm thinking of putting together a downloadable MP3 on my website for Christmas, Hanukkah, Thanksgiving. You know, like $1.99, you get all of these stories. Maybe I'll read them, as a matter of fact. Well, of course I'll read them, because here they are. It's in my voice. So here's one. Should I do the one on giving up hobbies? Let's play clip number 14. I haven't heard it in years.
I was thinking during the break of all the things I've started in my life. I was in my house the other day, and I saw a set of conga drums and timbales, and I've never played them. I bought them 2 years ago and never played them. I intended to take lessons. Didn't do it. Then I thought about all of the unrequited things I've done in my life. I took up martial arts lessons, I think, for 3 hours. Around 10 times in my life, I last 3 hours, gave that up. I started Russian language studies 20 years ago. I gave that up after 2 lessons. I started Chinese lessons and gave that up. And I thought back on why I started these things and stopped them. And there's actually a reason for each of them so that I don't feel guilty about it. Because I know people who do things every day. They go to this and that, and this one has a personal trainer, and that one is studying a language, and that the other one's taking a cooking lesson, and the third one is doing this, yoga. And I'm saying, well, I don't know. All I do is this radio show and bicycle a little bit. Go out of my boat and basically eat and sleep and dream. That's the entire life that I have right now. But that's it. I can only do this, and that's it. I can only do this right. That's all I have the energy for. Is this as my life, radio? But I stare at the conga drums every night and say, well, why did I bought it. Well, they look nice. But the reason I didn't take lessons is I realized that I'm ethnically not from Venezuela or Cuba. So I stopped the conga drums. Then the cooking lessons I gave up when I realized that I didn't want to eat all of that butter and salt that chefs seem to think is the key to all recipes. All they do is teach you how to put butter, sugar, and salt into everything, and they call it a recipe, so I gave that up. Then with regard to Russian, I studied it until the Berlin Wall came down. I realized it was a waste of time. As regards Chinese, I gave it up when I saw that the toothpaste that was coming out of China was contaminated. So that's why I sit before you actually liberated from all of these absurd thoughts of improving myself. I mean, the world's not going to be a worse or better place if I can play the conga drums, do martial arts. Actually, the reason I give up martial arts is because I bought a Glock. I realize that it's better. You ever see these guys? They go into like, oh, hey, ho, oh, hey, ho. Oh, and a 15-year-old gangbanger pulls out a gun and kills him. That's the horror of it all. So you can get overconfident. I mean, I love the martial arts to watch them, but don't confuse that with survival in an emergency situation in the street, because they're not one and the same. Again, it's something that should be used, you know, with caution. Don't think you're Superman because you know martial arts. You got idiots out there, morons, 15 years old with guns walking around. And I don't think knowing kung fu is going to help you if you encounter one of these psychos.
That's good.
That's the real reason before it.
That's good, Michael. Michael, very good. The guys picked that. It was the dealer's choice. I think that's when giving up hobbies. Because I realize I'm not doing enough with my life. I've only written 28 books, earned a PhD, two master's degrees. The cycle is complete with the grandchild. I mean, it's, I feel like I'm ready to molt and go. No, I'm going to stop. No, in many ways it is. The last stop on my radio career is Drive Time Radio. It's the last stop. It's the last stop on the train called radio. I don't want to go anywhere. I'll never do television. I don't want it. No one would hire me anyway. I'm too intelligent for television. Secondly, Megyn Kelly is better looking than I am. I don't have skirts like hers. My legs aren't as good. So why would Murdoch hire me? He certainly doesn't hire people based on their intelligence. He bases them hired on their lips, their lipstick, and their leg-crossing ability. So that's out. So you can forget CNN and MSNBC. I better stop right here. It's a family show. I was about to say some things about MSNBC. One of the hosts is astonishing. She looks more and more like a guy in every ad. I don't understand what she's trying to say. Why don't she just become a guy already? It's like watching a moth become something other than a moth. It's like a moth becoming a chrysalis instead of a moth becoming a butterfly. I don't care about her sexual orientation. It never bothered me because I'm a sexual libertarian. Let me clear that up. Her politics are so juvenile, predictable, sophomoric, left-wing 101. It's like leftism 101. Why listen to it? Now, here's another good soundbite because I'm into children now. This is Savage Advice on Child Rearing, a clip 16. Let's hear this one. I don't like cutesy. I don't like people who talk to their children cutesy. It makes me squirm. Ever hear these parents talk to their children with, like, cute talk? That's why the child winds up psycho. You know, I got to tell you a little trick about child rearing. In my opinion, one man's opinion, and I haven't done so bad, speak to them as you would an adult, and they will grow up more intelligent. And they will be more competent younger. You ever listen to the people with the children? I love the ones who take them to a restaurant and give them a lesson in front of you to show how smart they are. How smart the child is with the pencils and the coloring book. You're spending $29 for a plate of spaghetti that costs 4 cents. And there they are next to you. The guy with the ponytail, he's 63, with a 30-year-old girl he met somewhere at a club. And right away, a year later, they have the 2 years later, they have the baby. And 4 years later, ready the coloring book and the crayons in the pasta palace. And they're all set up. They got the whole thing. They got the backpack. They got the diaper at your next table. And they got the coloring book and the crayons, which should be outlawed in restaurants. It's not ding-dong school. Not everything is a ding-dong school. There was a time, and I raised children. I wasn't allowed in certain restaurants with the children when they were young. I didn't like it. But I understood it. People didn't want to be disturbed by children. Now, if they get sued, if they say to the people, you know what, we'd rather you not change doo-doo at the table, right away they call ACLU and a lawyer like an ACLU, or like a smarter one than an ACLU lawyer, the brother who went into private practice with the same mentality. Marvin goes into the ACLU because he's stupid, and Barry goes into the private practice and sues, but they're the same mentality, two heads of the same hydra. That's it, the coloring books in the restaurant. How do you spell Louisiana, Louise? Very good. And the mother claps at the death. You hear this? This is where you're sitting having a romantic meal. $29.95 for the pasta al ripoffo. Antipasto consisting of a piece of old rotten cheese from Brooklyn that they couldn't sell to the Italians in New York because they know better. So they ship it to San Francisco. That's $9.95 for one little piece of mozzarella cheese and a tomato. They give it an Italian name. $9.95 with a tomato and one little piece of cheese that the Italians rejected on the wharf. Even the wharf rats rejected it, but they can sell it in San Francisco. And $29.95 for pasta al creato. I don't mind it, all right, but you're going in for the ambience. No one's there for the food. They're in for the ambience. But the coloring book is there right away. And the lessons you have to listen to. Do you ever hear these lessons at these tables? Does this go on in Louisiana or only in the major cities that you have to listen to these impossible parents? I never talk cute to the children. Okay, I'm a product of my upbringing. Harsh, Spartan-like. Don't be cute. I don't like cute. No jokes. Just get back to work. No matter what I did, I try to entertain my... All right, get back to work. Stop the entertainment.
He knew I was trying to, like, wiggle out of work by entertaining him. All right, that's very good. Now get back there. Now radio. On the way into work, I swear to God, if I was, like, driving in his car, I don't know how old I was. He didn't want the radio on. If I tried to put the radio on because it was horrible, sitting next to your father in a car on the way to work, it was going to be a horrible day in a disgusting market all day long, which I didn't want to do. I didn't want to go to begin with, but I didn't say anything. Okay, he needed me there. That was the way it was done. I didn't have any option anyway. It was like a little prison camp. But all right, so you sit in the right seat like a dummy, your hands folded on your lap, and nothing, not a word, mum. The whole ride. BQE, the Kosciuszko Bridge, the stink of the pork dying there, the Trun's Meat Market, where the eye goes out. You think that you ran over a skunk, but there are no skunks in Williamsburg. That packing plant in August was enough, Mike. You talk about a weapon of mass destruction. The Trun's Meat Packing Plant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, in the 50s, was a WMD. That's why rents were low in those days. The floors were cockeyed with linoleum that when a dog would urinate in the bedroom would run into the living room because the floors were old. But that's the way it was. No one complained. Today you got the same losers who can't live in Manhattan. They live there now. They discovered the charm of Williamsburg. Oh, I really love it over here. It's really great. You know, it's right near the overpass, and I like the factory area. Nobody ever wanted to live there. Even when it was in its heyday, nobody wanted to live there. But the point I'm making is a little different. So if you sit in the car, you're next to your father driving to work, and you know you can't say anything. There's nothing to say. He's grim. He's white. His hands are white-knuckled on the wheel because he's going in again another horrible day to make a living. Nothing was fun. Nobody worked in those days for fun. This was an evolution of the Dr. Spock generation. Oh, find what's fun and pursue it. Pursue what's fun. To my father, nothing was fun. It was grim, horrible. It was like Grimm's fairy tales. Came over, work, drop dead, and move on. It's in the ground. In the ground. That's it. Next case. Next generation. There was no fun from another world. They didn't know what the word fun was. So he's driving to work. The hands are like white knuckles, and I'm sitting here. So my hand reaches. The left hand reaches for the radio dial, like to punch a button in. No, no radio. So what do you mean no radio? I don't want music. Why? Never mind why. This is not entertainment. It's work. So, all right. So work has to be torture. I get it. All right. That's why I'm in the radio business. I was made for this. What I'm getting at is he didn't like cute. If he saw people, and I'm the same way, unfortunately. I've become him, in essence. This is how it is. All the years I resisted becoming him, I came, oh, a long time ago I became my father. I admit it. There must be something to it. Worked for him. It's worked for me so far. But he didn't like cute, people who talk cute to the children. You know, the guy was 100% right. Let's say I'm talking generally, 9 out of the 10 couples did not talk to their children in because it was like embarrassing. Anyone who did that, the child either wound up in San Francisco wearing a pink set of tights at 19 expressing himself, or the girl wound up married to her sorority sister. 9 out of 10, they never wound up okay. None of them became anything. That's true, because of the liberal upbringing. Liberalism not only is a mental disorder, but destroys children. You need to raise children the old-fashioned way. I don't say hurt them. I never got hit. He didn't hit me. Just verbal abuse. It worked better.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
This is the last word in talk radio. Savage Nation coming to the end of hour number two. My friend Jack just said, who was laughing in the background as you play those stories? The answer, Jack, is me. The guys normally turn the microphone off when they do a little sound run. I said, put it on because my laughter is contagious. Well, it's true. I was actually laughing at my own shtick, which is funny. I'm actually putting together things. I'm listening to them. They're very good. Let's take some calls. Ferris in Rochester, New York, on WHAM, a member of the Savage Nation, apparently number 19 of the 20 Savagettes. Ferris, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, thank you. I wanted to let you know I was maybe number 19 or 20 of your Savagettes. I'm so excited about your move to Drive Time. I think it'll the only way that I can accept it and let you go from the nighttime is that more people will be affected hearing you
Well, let me ask you, you listen to the show at night, it's late, and we're in Rochester, it's almost 11 o'clock at night. Are you going to have time to listen to me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
No, that's what's the problem.
Bingo. I knew I'd get the wrong answer.
I'm going to
have... Okay, now, so how is it that the drive time audience is five times larger?
It's drive time. It's, you know what? It depends on when you work. I work evening shifts. I'm a nurse.
Oh, well, I'll lose some of the people from the night, but people during the day who don't listen to radio at night will suddenly discover me. They will never have heard of me. Would you imagine that, Ferris?
You know, I can't believe it. With my whole life, I would never believe it. That's the only way I can seriously let you go out of my nighttime routine.
Well, maybe some of the stations will continue to carry a replay at night. I don't know. But, Ferris, thanks for being Savagette number 20. 855-470. When I was off the radio for that month or so, when I went between, you know, homes, and people were sending emails, what's going to happen in my life when I don't have, you know, Blue Monday, and I don't have Rock and Roll Friday, and I don't have Savage complaining about indigestion from Indian food, and then hitting us with a lightning bolt insight on politics like I never heard in my life. How am I going to live without it? I don't know. So far, I'm still here. So it was big news today. I mean, the news was very big. Obama lied about everything that he said. Did you hear this, that he has 150 different languages to sell Obamacare? Let me ask you a question. Did you hear this clip, too? You got to hear this again. Listen.
And there is a hotline where you can apply over the phone and get help with the application. Or just get questions that you have answered by real people in 150 different languages.
Stop right there. How can they have people giving out methods to sign up to the socialized medicine in 150 different languages and at the same time say that it is closed to illegal aliens? Why is it not limited to those who speak English only? Because Obama wants to and is fracturing America, especially the middle class. Obama is destroying our borders, language, and culture. Obama is, by definition, the destroyer. He is Obama the destroyer, not Obama the creator. So now that we've finished the Obama insights of the evening, let's go to the next caller, Fred on KBET. Fred, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage, for taking my phone call.
Yes, sir.
I want to comment on our commander-in-chief, who never served one day in our wonderful military service, and yet he has the gall to fire two Marine Corps major generals.
Correct. Combat-hardened major generals on trumped-up charges after he dismissed the number two in command of our nuclear arsenal last Sunday, after he had fired three major generals after Benghazi, who were willing to send men to help stop that dastardly attack. He is purging the military just as Stalin did. That's my opinion. Do you disagree?
No, absolutely not. But what did he do at Benghazi with Hillary Clinton? Nothing. And that night, he went to sleep early so the next day he could fly here to Las Vegas.
Well, he's getting... Listen, Fred, he's getting ready for a trip to Asia any day now. Even though there's a government shutdown, apparently the pilots are still working. And the crew that runs Air Force One is still operating. They're one of the 800,000 workers who apparently were not laid off. I think Michelle's hairdresser hasn't been fired. I don't think that the White House chefs have been fired. I don't think the dog walker in the White House has been fired. I don't think the Marine Corps pilot who flies the dog on an Osprey helicopter has been fired. Do you?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to The Savage Nation for Tuesday, October 1st, 2013, hour number 3. Over 700 entities businesses, unions, individuals have been granted exemptions from Obamacare. Now, what you have to understand is the Republicans are as dumb as a piece of wood. Because if they grant an exemption to any entity, that means anyone could be granted an exemption with a lawsuit. And that means any lawyer worth his salt could file a class action lawsuit and sign up tens of millions of people and sue the government for not exempting individuals based upon individual needs. How can you exempt a hardware store? How can you exempt a nightclub in Las Vegas? How can you exempt Nancy Pelosi's friends in San Francisco without exempting anyone who wants to be exempted? I have said this since I published Trickle Down Tyranny. I cited the Schechter case when FDR overreached and tried to create socialized commerce system. He was actually taken to the Supreme Court and lost by three Jewish butchers in Brooklyn. Obama can be stopped if he's sued and taken to the Supreme Court. So I have been basically doing a filibuster today by reading as many of these entities as I could who are exempt from socialized medicine. Obama the drama is what I've been calling it. Obama the drama. And so I have no power. I am simply a minister without portfolio. Now, what is a minister without portfolio? Well, I am fundamentally in the United States, I'm an individual who has some influence on governmental affairs, but I hold no formal office. Mine is a joke, of course. It's unofficial. It underscores the extent of the individual's already existing influence, but it does not grant any power, and that's the crux right here. There is no power except amongst Obama the drama. Obama has all the power. The two parties have almost no power, and that's why we have lost our democracy. See, we lost the two-party system a while ago because of the fact that once we lost the media, we then lost the opposition party, which, of course, would provide a much-needed counterbalance to the Obama drama destructive policies. And I've asked this audience numerous times, can we truly prevent the tsunami that is engulfing us? I feel as if the tsunami is pulling itself out to sea one last time before returning into shore to crush all of us. What we're experiencing right now in America is the prelude to the real tsunami. I don't know if Obama the drama is the manufacturer of the tsunami. He may just be the harbinger. All I know is when we lost the press, we lost the country. We have no opposition party. I came to the conclusion today that our form of government is about the worst form of government on the planet. It is the most imperfect system ever invented. It has been abused by a tin horn like Obama and his gang to the point that there is no longer a two-party system. A true participatory democracy would allow the people to throw out an incompetent government more often than just every 4 years. Don't you understand that I explained to you that if you give an exemption to one person or one entity, that means anyone can apply for an exemption, which means that any class action lawyer can sign up a class of 10 million people and sue the government for discrimination, for not permitting them to opt out of this Castro-like healthcare system. How is it possible that a hypocrite like Obama, which I call Obama's drama, this is now Obama's drama, steal it and run with it, steal this idea, Obama's drama is Obamacare. When I heard him say one faction of one party in one House of Congress in one branch of government doesn't get to shut down the entire government just to refight the results of an election, a bulb went off in my head. And I thought, wait a minute, so a minority president doesn't respect the minority opinion? That's the mark of a dictatorship. That's the mark of an authoritarian ruining and running a government by himself. Listen to what I'm saying to you. Here is a minority president who doesn't respect the minority opinion and won't negotiate with the minority. He tells the minority they don't count. He tells the minority in the one party, in one house, in one branch of government, they don't exist. He tells the minority of one party, in one house of Congress, in one branch of government, that they have no opinion that matters in this country. So here we have a draconian minority president who doesn't respect minority opinion. Moreover, he lied, because they're not shutting down the entire government. That's a big lie. That's the first big lie of Obama the drama. 800,000 federal workers are not being furloughed. 800,000 are not being furloughed. If they're non-essential services and workers, Which of them need to be permanently cut and why? Obama's drama, his big lie today, was saying that one faction of one party in one House of Congress and one branch of government has shut down the entire government just to refight the results of an election. He lied in every element of that sentence is a lie. That's number one. Number two, he shows that he himself is a minority president. Does not respect a minority opinion. What does that tell you about this man's character and his mental state? And it also tells you that he's willing to lie at every stage. I mean, everyone will lie here and there as a politician. But this man is a naked liar about everything. It's unbelievable to me. 800,000 workers are not furloughed. That's number one. The government's not shut down. No one's trying to refight the results of an election. You changed the Obamacare law. It's not even a semblance of what was passed. It was modified 100 different ways by Pelosi, by Obama, by Reid, by the special interest that could reach even Republicans. Do you know there are multiple types of groups who are exempt? But I'll give you a few. You're not going to believe what I'm telling you. You can be exempt if you're part of a federally recognized Indian tribe. Now search for some Indian blood. Apply for tribal recognition. You can become exempt. People who can't afford coverage. That's interesting. So you're going to carry them on your back. People with household income so low they don't have to file a federal income tax return. Carry them on your back. I'm going to give you the juiciest idea you've had in years. Those of you looking for a new angle, I want you to put out an ad, a class of people who want to be exempted from Obamacare, who are not allowed to be exempted because they're not a member of one of the contributing unions or organizations such as 24-Hour Fitness, Allied Building Inspectors, IUOE, Alpha Omega Home Health, LLC, Anderson Corporation, Bowman's Sheet Metal Heating and Air Conditioning, because they're not a member of any of these groups or companies who paid off someone in the administration, in my estimation, to get an exemption. They're being discriminated against, and therefore you have a major class action lawsuit against Sebelius and against the government itself. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Outline where you can apply over the phone and get help with the application. Or just get questions that you have answered by real people in 150 different languages.
What?
Let me give you that number. The number is 1-800.
Did you hear what Obama the drama just said? They have translators in 150 languages to make certain that every illegal immigrant on the planet can sign up for this monstrosity called Obamacare. Now, who else is exempt from the Affordable Care Act, which is, you know, the Affordable Care Act unto itself is something that only Nancy Pelosi could come up with. Because nobody can believe this is going to be affordable to anybody. Do you know who else is exempt? If you're a member of a federally recognized tribe, I told you. If you're a member of a religion that has an objection to this, you can opt out. Jail or prison, opt out. If you're not a U.S. citizen or a national, you can opt out. In other words, they don't have to pay. You get it? This is a twofer. In other words, if you're an illegal alien making $1 million a year, you don't have to sign up for Obamacare. Now, here it comes. People who experience a hardship will be exempted from the Affordable Care Act if they wish. What is a hardship? This was written in after the law was passed. Being homeless or recently homeless. Being evicted in the past 6 months. Or facing eviction or foreclosure. So all you need to do is get a lawyer to send the letter saying you're facing eviction or foreclosure. You're out of Obamacare. Who's going to check on it? One of the morons they're hiring? Being a victim of domestic violence, you're out of Obamacare. Having a close family member die recently, you're out of Obamacare. Did you hear what that is? Everyone has a family member who dies, so now you can opt out of Obamacare using that as a pretext. Filing for bankruptcy in the past 6 months, you're out of Obamacare. So who is left? I'll tell you who's left. The young people, the dummies. The young dummies who thought that Obama was young and cool and Romney was old and uncool. The young dummies who were snookered by Nancy Pelosi and the slickest advertising campaign in the history of mankind. The young dummies who voted for this cool guy, Obama, are going to support the entire system on their backs. Why? Well, because they're basically healthy and don't use doctors. But they're going to have to pay $150 to $300 a month each, is my guess, to support everybody else. And this is what I'm trying to tell you, is the young people don't even know what's coming. They don't even understand what they did to themselves. They were taken in by their own, belief system, their own biases. I want to go back to the Schechter brothers. The Schechter Brothers Poultry Company in New York, the four Jewish brothers who opened kosher poultry slaughterhouses. In Yiddish, their last name means ritual butcher. What does that mean? They butcher chickens to conform to Jewish dietary law. And in order to maintain a kosher operation, the Schechter brothers had to sort out or remove sickly or dangerously unhealthy chickens. Well, that flew in the face of the new regulations handed down by Obama's spiritual uncle FDR in his totalitarian mandate. In short, Obama's ancestor, FDR, and his government said customers had to buy either an entire coop of chickens or half a coop of chickens, but they were forbidden to pick out particular birds in the transaction. In other words, the new law forced the Schechter brothers to sell unhealthy chickens to people who didn't want to buy them. So that made no sense to a kosher business. So it violated their religious freedom. And they said they're not going to do it. So the government cracked down on them, and they went to jail. They ran afoul of the live poultry code of the NRA. They were arrested. Listen to this. Arrested by Obama's mentor, FDR, tried in court, and they went head-to-head with the government lawyers. These were uneducated men and had no legal training. They had a lawyer, but it was not a big-shot lawyer from a top firm. They hardly spoke any English. Their command of English was so broken, and their syntax was such today that you would associate it with a stand-up comedian from the Catskills. In the end, FDR, Obama's mentor, found them guilty as charged, fined them a year's wage, and then sent them to prison. But the story didn't end there, and I'm trying to read this to you for a reason. The Schechter brothers appealed their case, which ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court. And against all odds, in Schechter Poultry Corp. versus the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled in favor of the Schechter brothers. And wait till you hear what was written. The Supremes ruled that FDR's program was unconstitutional on several levels. Of primary concern was the way his NRA program sought to regulate interstate commerce. Constitutionally speaking, interstate law is governed by the states and not the feds. Now, furthermore, the Supreme Court said that FDR's regulations were an usurpation of congressional power. After the decision was handed down, Justice Louis Brandeis, for whom Brandeis University is named, he would roll over in his grave if he saw the type of insanity taught at Brandeis today. Justice Louis Brandeis told a lawyer representing FDR's New Deal the following. Listen to this one line. Listen to it. This is a lesson for Obama and his dictators. Here's what Brandeis said. He was a Supreme Court justice. He said, "This is the end of this business of centralization, and I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything. It's come to an end." That is Justice Louis Brandeis, who put an end to FDR's Stalinism. Because back then we had justices who could speak plain English and tell the plain truth. Imagine one of our Supreme Court justices today drawing a line in the sand against the president in such a direct manner. And this brings us back to how Obama's Frankenstein health care bill can be repealed. It's all in trickle-up poverty from pages one, I think it's one, I have 30 pages on it, chapter 5, the health scare fraud, what's really in the bill. I try to warn you, many of you bought the book, it was a bestseller. We're waiting for someone to sue Obama's regulatory department. We're waiting for somebody to sue Sebelius. We're waiting for it to get to the Supreme Court, where hopefully it will be overturned. It will take a while. Someone may have to go to jail in order to sue. But remember, you won't be alone and you will win. The fight is just beginning. I am the architect of the new America. I have written enough books for you to use trickle-up poverty and trickle-down tyranny alone as the architectural plan to save America, incidentally. It's that simple. I don't know what else to say to you. If you care to comment on any of the comments I've made or on Obama's comments, 855-407-282. Now, I would be remiss if I only focused on Obamacare today when Benjamin Netanyahu came to the United Nations and made an appeal that was very, very frighteningly frightening, because he made a proclamation that he will not permit Iran to develop a nuclear weapon. He said if he has to go it alone, Israel will do it. And there's a reason for it, because Iran has said they'll wipe Israel off the map. It's an existential problem the Israelis face. They're not going to let men, women, and children be annihilated by Iran's nuclear bomb. They don't care who argues what, why they argue it, how they argue it. And that is because Iran is a rogue nation. Iran is not a member of the family of man. In other words, you say, well, other nations have the nuclear weapon. Why shouldn't they? Logically, you're correct. But there's no other nation on Earth that said, I'll use my nuclear weapon when I get it to wipe out a race, because I am a racist psychotic who has twisted my religion into something it was never intended to be. And so Iran is a rogue nation run by a group of rogue elements. Israel has every right, as David did, to stand up to the Goliath. You may say, well, no, Israel's the Goliath. No, my friend, Israel's not the Goliath. Israel is the biblical David, and the hostile Islamic world is the Goliath. And I can guarantee you, when you listen to Netanyahu's statement on this, which I'll play in a moment, you will understand that he will strike Goliath in the eye and blind him forever if Goliath tries to step on him. Let's hear Netanyahu right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Israel will never acquiesce to nuclear arms in the hands of a rogue regime that repeatedly promises to wipe us off the map. Against such a threat, Israel will have no choice but to defend itself. I want there to be no confusion on this point. Israel will not allow Iran to get nuclear weapons. If Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone. Yet in standing alone, Israel will know that we will be defending many, many others.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
We all know that the global warming racket is out of control. And we've been talking about the flawed UN IPCC report, which blames mankind for the so-called global warming, which doesn't exist. It doesn't even account for the fact there's been no warming for 15 years. There's been cooling. Joining us now on the Savage Nation is Steve Gorham, the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America and author of the new book, The Mad, Mad, Mad World of Climatism, Mankind and Climate Change Mania. Steve Gorham, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, Dr. Savage. Great to join you today.
Steve, in the recent IPCC Fifth Assessment Report, the fakers conclude that it's extremely likely that humans have caused recent global warming. What's the actual fact here?
Yeah, it's interesting. This is their fifth report that was just out last week, and they actually found it more likely now that humans were causing dangerous climate change. They place it at extremely likely, 95%. The previous report in 2007 said 90%. But actually, the empirical data is showing something else right now. We've not had warming of global surface temperatures for the last 15 years. So it's difficult to see how they have greater surety about their conclusions.
Well, why is it that major scientific organizations are wrong about climate change? Isn't it that they're basically not science anymore? They're just political fronts for the Obama warmest industry?
Well, two reasons. First, the world jumped to a conclusion. Back in 1988, Dr. James Hansen of NASA came before Congress at the behest of Al Gore, actually, and testified he was 99% sure that the Earth was warming and mankind was causing it. And that very same year, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change was formed by the United Nations, and that group found that man was the cause of climate change. And then just 3.5 years later, at the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit, 41 nations signed a treaty saying they would reduce greenhouse gases. And for the last 20 years, our political leaders have been arguing about how much to reduce emissions and when. So the world jumped to a conclusion. That's the first item. But second, this whole idea now is driven by money. We have more than $250 billion, $250 billion spent each year on renewables, on carbon trading, on all sorts of other things, research. And so this is like a container ship now that's moving forward. Even though more and more scientific data shows that the conclusions are not correct, it's going to be very difficult to turn it around.
The warmists are claiming that the seas are rising and the polar ice is melting. That's a complete mistake. It's a lie. I pointed it out in a trickle-down tyranny.
Yeah, people need to remember that melting ice, in particular the Arctic and Glacier National Park and Mount Kilimanjaro, Melting ice is evidence of warming, but not what is causing the warming. And it is true that Arctic ice is at a 30-year low, but Arctic ice comes and goes. Throughout history, we have much historical evidence of that. But that's only 1 to 2% of Earth's ice. And the Antarctic ice, which is 90% of Earth's ice, has been increasing for the last 30 years, according to satellite data. But you hear very, very little about that in the press. So the evidence doesn't really support the contention that we're seeing anything that's abnormal.
Your book is entitled Climatism. What do you mean by climatism?
Well, climatism is my word for the ideology that has captured the world. I call it the mad, mad, mad world of climatism. And climatism is the belief that man-made greenhouse gases are destroying Earth's climate. Today we have 192 out of 194 heads of state of the world that say they believe in the theory of man-made warming, yet more and more evidence shows that climate change is overwhelmingly caused by the sun, by weather and clouds, by natural cycles of the Earth, and not carbon dioxide, a trace gas.
It seems this is less about the temperature and more about a war on the use of energy.
Yeah, it is. It's funny that this is, in some ways, a tempest in a teapot. It's all about 1 degree. We've had about 1 degree rise in the last 130 years, and many periods in the past when temperatures have been warmer. And of course, we went through the ice age, and we had swings of 7 to 12 degrees Celsius during that period. But you're right. Many organizations are now using the theory of man-made climate change to oppose various things. There is a war on energy going on. The United Nations wants to redistribute wealth globally. They have an effort to raise $100 billion a year and transfer it from the industrialized nations to the developing nations. And, of course, we have carbon traders and we have many others, wind and solar groups, industries that are profiting from this idea that man is causing dangerous climate change.
Steve, what can we do?
Well, people need to educate themselves first, and then they need to challenge their political leaders who are saying that the oceans are rising and this trace gas is causing it. And some of the tough questions are, well, how much less will the oceans rise if we put this law into place? One example is that we have renewable portfolio standards laws right now in 29 states. Very bad laws that require our utilities to buy an increasing amount of renewable energy or be fined. And since renewables are more expensive than traditional sources of energy for electricity, this raises electric bills. This raises taxes because we have subsidies for these groups. So people need to educate themselves, and then they need to oppose some of these policies that are all based on climatism and this idea that mankind is destroying the climate.
You write that climatism places chains on developing nations. Explain what you mean by this.
Well, they do, and the reason is that all of the developed nations of the world developed using hydrocarbon energy, coal, natural gas, oil, and the use of those energy sources is very highly correlated with high incomes and prosperity. The developing nations have not learned to use those energy sources yet. Often they don't have electricity. They don't have natural gas or propane or butane to heat their homes. And they need to use these sources of energy to advance, to reduce poverty, to improve their hospitals, their health care, increase their lifespans. Yet the industrialized nations are telling them, well, you can't use these fuels. And indeed, President Obama this summer came out and said he would no longer support financial loans for coal-fired power plants, yet people across the world don't have electricity. So in many ways, the industrialized nations are putting chains on the developing nations by not allowing them to use the sources of energy that we have for our own prosperity.
Even if carbon dioxide emissions are not causing global warming, isn't it a good idea to build wind turbines and solar plants to provide energy? We know there are problems with windmills. They're killing eagles and other rare birds. But what about it?
Problem is that you don't really get a lot of energy out of wind and solar. Right now, wind and solar provide 1% of the world's energy, and 83% is from hydrocarbons. They're very expensive. They're 2 to 3 times as expensive. And they don't really reduce greenhouse gases either. When you combine wind with hydrocarbon sources like coal or natural gas, what you do is you create an electricity system that is a stop-and-go electricity system, because the wind goes up and down and the backup power plants have to go up and down, and so those run very inefficiently, and you don't really reduce greenhouse gas emissions. From a cost standpoint or a reliability standpoint, a reduction in greenhouse gases, if you believe in that is a problem, the renewables really don't do anything for us. Yet the world is spending, as I said, $250 billion a year to try and decarbonize and to buy these systems. It's a vast misallocation of resources when we should be solving the real problems of the world, hunger, disease, poverty, and other things.
Where can we read more, Steve?
Well, they can go to my website, climatism.net, or get a copy of my book, The Mad, Mad, Mad World of Climatism, at Amazon or at Barnes & Noble. And my favorite quote about it is Timothy Renshaw of Business in Vancouver says, "Mad, bad, and dangerous to read."
Steve Gorham, thanks again for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Thanks so much, Dr. Savage. I'm always at your service.
I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Now, I want to go back to Obamacare for a reason, because I want to tell you a story about me when I was 14 years old, because many of you love my stories. It's something others are trying to match, and it's unfortunately they can't do it. When I was 14, you see, I took a job in a local drugstore in Queens, New York. It had nothing in common with the big name brand drugstores found in just about every neighborhood these days. This was a simple mom and pop drugstore. And I'll never forget the first time I met Doc the pharmacist. Doc was an Italian immigrant from the old country who probably lived in a small apartment over the shop. He was a thick-set man with an oversized shoe on his right foot. The heel must have been 8 inches high to compensate for his short leg. Unlike the sterile-looking pharmacies today with their harsh overhead lighting designed to give you a migraine so you buy more aspirin, I don't think there was a fluorescent light bulb in that drugstore. Doc's store had wooden shelves sagging under the weight of tonics and lotions, I can remember it to this day, and glass display cases with rows of first aid supplies and sundries. It even smelled different. To this day, I still remember the distinctly pleasing aroma greeting me the moment I'd walked through the door of Doc's drugstore. I'll put it to you this way. It was as if the mahogany counters and floor had been scrubbed down with Old Spice and Lysol with a hint of leather. Whatever happened to that incredible smell? I should have bottled it. These days, drugstores smell like nothing, and nobody knows your name. With Doc, you felt like family. So let's set aside the fact that he was paying me 50 cents an hour below minimum wage to save a few bucks. I was happy. I had a paying job on the weekends, and after school, I worked 7 days a week. That's all I needed. I was glad for the work and looked forward to going there. At lunch, Doc's wife treated him like a king. She'd bring in a big tray with a top to keep the veal parmesan or other homemade feasts warm. He'd sit down at his desk for the better part of an hour, savoring every bite. Preferring to eat his meal in peace, he'd make me, the 14-year-old, the pharmacist. I mean, how hard was it to fill out the prescriptions? All I had to do was read penicillin 250 milligrams, find the right jar, and it said penicillin, and then count out a dozen pills. I didn't need medical training to count to 12. The only time things got a bit dicey was on the rare occasion when some doctor wanted a blend of drugs ground together. You know, he'd ask for 2 milligrams of sulfur powder and 0.5 gram of phosphorus plus other ingredients. They still did that, if you can believe it. These Doc would compound himself. All I did was count pills, like today's college-educated pharmacists. Well, one afternoon, I'm doing my job, counting out pills, minding my own business, while Doc was wiping the sauce from the edges of his mouth. In walks a guy in a dark suit and a receding hairline. He looked a lot like Robert Duvall as Tom Hagen in The Godfather. I glanced up as he approached the counter. I never saw the man before and had no idea what he wanted. He studied me like a hawk, watching me filling out the prescriptions. And then with a fake smile, he said, hi, how are you, son? Fine, I said. Well, I didn't know at the time why he was scoping out the place. Something about him made me instinctively wary. Can I help you, mister? No, just looking, he said. He raised an eyebrow like an IRS agent who just found an unreported nickel during an audit. his eyes darting around the drugstore, zeroed in on Doc, sitting beside me, eating the last few bites of his veal parmesan. The next minute, he marches behind the counter to Doc, pulls out his ID, and says, "Doc, I've got real bad news for you." I later learned he was a city government inspector. That afternoon, Doc got hit with a fine, and I lost my job. It was a watershed moment in my life. Looking back, there have been two life-changing outcomes from those experiences working in the pharmacy. I came away with a profound interest in medicine, and years later went on to write several best-selling books on the topic, including Earth Medicine, Maximum Immunity, Healing Children Naturally, and Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. That's number one. Second, I grew to be leery of government intervention, particularly when a bureaucrat flashes a fake smile and pretends he or she is there for my benefit. Back then, I lost my job when the government stepped in. Today, I'm losing the best healthcare system in the world. You get it? That's the story. When did America become a socialist nation? Answer, when the federal government became America's largest employer. That's what socialism is. It's textbook. Obama is in the long line of other socialists around the world, transforming America in front of your eyes into something it was never written to be, nor intended to be. You're supposed to be a nation of free people, not ruled by a group of bureaucrats, not ruled by these bureaucrats, certainly not supporting these bureaucrats with the grotesque benefits and salaries. No, that's not America. That's Obama's vision of a socialist America. He is on a bullet train. Obama is the engineer of a bullet train to transform America into something it was never intended to be. You can mark those words down. Obama is the engineer on a bullet train taking America to a place it was never intended to be. And anyone who opposes him, anyone who even voices a question or a comment, is called a right-winger. Again, in the great tradition of demagogues before him in other countries, Obama is perhaps the most dangerous demagogue in American history. I don't know of another president who ever attained this level of distemper towards the taxpayer. I know on local levels there have been some pretty bad people who are along these lines. Huey Long in Louisiana comes to mind, but that was a long time ago. People have probably forgotten him. Kingfish. Obama's in the line of a kingfish type who's taken over the White House, goes on the world stage and appeases the Hitler of our time, tells us there's a fatwa. In his own words, he repeats the big lie of Iran that they've issued a fatwa against the development of nuclear weapons when everybody knows, anyone who studied this knows it's a lie. A lie, one of the most dangerous lies in the world, is to repeat the big lie by the President of the United States. And think about it. The same man who would shake hands and meet with, they wouldn't shake, actually, the President of Iran wouldn't shake hands with Obama. Instead, he had Louis Farrakhan to a private dinner in New York City last week. The President then goes and repeats the President of Iran's big lie about a fatwa against the development of nuclear weapons, and then treats the President of Iran with more dignity, more respect, and more trust than he does the members of the United States Tea Party, who represent the taxpayers of America. Never forget who they are. They're not foreigners. They're not strangers. They're not invaders. They're not from Mars. They're you and I. That's the Tea Party. What is the Tea Party? It's taxpayers who've had enough, who say, tighten your belt. You're bankrupting the country. You're killing us. Yes, you inherited $1 trillion in debt, but you made it $4 trillion. Any child knows that if he spends more than he makes, he's going to go broke. But Obama is like a child who takes apart a watch and can't put it back together again. And he so enjoys destroying the watch that he destroys one watch after another. That would be every institution in America. He takes them apart one by one and can't put them back together again. So now he wants to take apart the healthcare system, which is flawed and grotesque, but still provides some of the best health care in the world. He wants to make it even worse, not better. It's not the Affordable Care Act. That's one of the greatest propaganda lies in history. It's something only a Nancy Pelosi and her minions could come up with. The Affordable Care Act? The young people are going to get screwed royally. People without any illnesses are going to pay for all of the leeches at the end of the line, the illegal aliens, those abusing the system, those who visit doctor after doctor after doctor and get drug after drug after drug. Who do you think is going to pay for it? The young people who have no illnesses at all. It's not an Affordable Care Act, not at all. It's the opposite of it. Right now we have a very good medical care system, the best in the world, which is why the people come from around the world for the medical care in America. Everybody knows how good it is. I had a personal experience with it over the weekend. Child was born in the family. I saw one of the most perfect obstetrics wards and neonatal wards and child care. I've never seen anything as beautiful in my life. The staff was wonderful. The care was wonderful. The hospital was clean and organized. Do you actually believe that this standard of care will exist 10 years from now if this Leninist is permitted to jam this down our throats? Do you actually believe that this level of care will be provided to a young mother giving birth to a baby? Do you believe as an older person that the care you receive today at the hands of your doctors will be around in 5 years if this Leninist is permitted to put his miserable Cuban-style system into play in this country? Do you actually believe that this extremist cares about you? Do you believe that this radical extremist and his goons care about your well-being? Do you actually believe that? I don't, because I know it's not true.
Savage. Savage.